And look with me at Proverbs 26. I believe that's where we are ready for as we're looking through these last few chapters of Proverbs. And as you know, a lot of the Proverbs are not very much themed. Every proverb has a different thought, and they're practical lessons, pearls of wisdom for us. Though I would say that these first several all kind of relate to the fool. In fact, I believe in the first 12 verses, all but one of the verses specifically mentions the fool. That's one of the sub-themes of Proverbs. Really, Proverbs deals with wisdom, but the opposite of that is the behavior of the fool. So look at what it says in Proverbs 26:1. Like snow in summer, and like rain in harvest, so honor is not fitting a fool. We would not expect to get snow in July, right? That would be really strange, and something would go really haywire with our weather if that were to happen. For them, rain in harvest was not common. That was not a rainy season. You didn't get rain in the harvest. And so you say, those things just don't fit. Well, neither does honor fit a fool. When you honor a fool, it does all sorts of bad things. It's certainly inconsistent with reality. And it really is about as harmful as bad weather out of season. Think about what honoring a fool does to the fool. You know, he's going to think he's right. He's going to believe the compliments. And it's going to go to his head. Think about what it does to other people. It's going to give them a false impression that he actually has something worthwhile to say. It's going to give him more opportunity to spread his mischief. You think about, like, heroes people have. You know, like, there are certain figures in society, sports figures, entertainment figures, political figures, whatever, that people really have as their heroes. Well, if our hero is a fool, it's really not a good thing. If you honor the people who act and live in a foolish way, It really creates about as much problem as having snow in July. Look at verse 2. Like a sparrow in its flitting, like a swallow in its flying, so a curse without cause does not alight. Now he talked about giving something good honor to somebody bad, a fool. Now he talks about giving something bad, a curse, to somebody good, an innocent person. And what he's saying is, don't worry if a fool curses you. It won't land. It won't do any damage. There was kind of the idea in their age that if somebody cursed you, that curse would really happen. Well, not if it's a fool, and not if he's cursing you unrighteously. Remember when Goliath called down curses on David? All that did was get Goliath in more trouble and make it more likely God was going to bring him down. Remember when Balaam did everything in the world he could figure out to try to curse the Israelites, and every time he opened his mouth, a blessing came out instead. God controlled his mouth. So there's a limit to other people's power. They can't hurt you if it's not appropriate for them to. God's the one in control, not the fool. Look at verse 3. A whip is for the horse, a bridle for the donkey, and a rod for the back of fools. You know what that says about the fool, right? You can't reason with him. You can't talk to him and get anywhere. About the only thing you can do is get physical with him and beat him. He's not going to listen to anything else. A fool's kind of like a dumb animal. It takes brute force to manage him. That's just suggesting how unreasonable and stubborn fools usually are. Well, how do you deal with them then? Well, try verse 4. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you will also be like him. It's like, don't lower yourself to his level. If you try to argue with him, it's like you're saying that he said something worth arguing with. You know, don't argue with him as if he were a sensible person. He's not. Don't lower yourself to his methods of argumentation. Do you see that idea? You know, it would just be, it'd be so wrong, because it elevates him as if he were real, you know, had something worthwhile to say. But then look at verse 5. We're in Proverbs 26:5. Answer a fool as his folly deserves, that he not be wise in his own eyes. Just the opposite. Four said, don't answer a fool according to his folly. Five said, you better answer him, you know, even though he's foolish. Now, the reason he says that is, if you don't answer him, you know what he's going to think. He think you just couldn't. You know, he's so smart, you had nothing you could say back. And other people might believe him if you don't answer him. So sometimes you have to stand up for wisdom. So which is it? Don't answer him according to his folly, or do? You realize what some people who don't really understand what they're talking about do. They use passages like this to say the Bible contradicts itself. Well, surely Solomon had enough sense to figure out that he put the opposite thing in two adjacent verses. What he's saying is, A, you can't win when you deal with a fool. Whether you don't answer him or whether you do answer him, both ways are wrong. You're never going to win when you're trying to talk to a fool, you know, any way you go. And you also understand that problems are often complicated, and there's not just one simple, easy way to handle it. There are probably some times when it's better just not to answer the fool. But there are probably some times when he probably needs an answer, even though it's going to kind of lower you to do it. You know, you understand how you have to use wisdom principles at the right moment. You know, we do that all the time with our little wise sayings. Which is it? Look before you leap, or he who hesitates is lost? Well, kind of depends, right? You know, sometimes you'd better be careful and cautious, or you're going to get yourself in trouble. And sometimes if you don't act now, it's going to be too late. You kind of have to have wisdom to know when to apply what. So I think that's what you're dealing with in this. Maybe in unimportant matters, don't even bother to talk to the fool. When it really matters, you're probably going to need to answer him, or he's going to think he won. Then look at verse 6. This is kind of curious. He cuts off his own feet and drinks violence, who sends a message by the hand of a fool. You know, it would just, well, think about this. I mean, you know, sending a message is kind of like not 21st century, right? I mean, whoever tells somebody to take a message to somebody, we don't even use the mail anymore. You know, you send the message electronically somehow or other. And so it's kind of a different circumstance. But think back in the olden days when they didn't even have the mail. And so if you want to get a message to somebody, you're going to have to tell somebody, you go and tell him that. Well, you're better off just not even sending the message than trying to send it by the fool. You know, if he even delivers it, it's going to be totally garbled and backfire on you. You know, it doesn't save time. You know, it's like you would never want to give a fool some important task that you really need done right. He won't do it right. That's one thing you know. It's like that you'd purposely lame yourself so it'd make the journey better. No, it won't. So don't ever try to send a message by a fool. Then look at verse 7. Like the legs which are useless to the lame, so is a proverb in the mouth of fools. Look at verse 9. Like a thorn which falls into the hand of a drunkard, so is a proverb in the mouth of fools. So a fool absolutely has no clue what to do with a proverb. You know, he doesn't understand it. He doesn't know how to apply it. He'll have a knack for saying some things that might be wise in some context at totally the wrong moment and applying it in the wrong way. He thinks he's being clever, and really, he's just falling flat on his face. You know, a parrot could memorize, you know, some Greek word, you know, but he doesn't understand it. You know, a fool sometimes actually memorizes some things that sound pretty smart, but he's totally weird with how he tries to use them. So he says, really, it's like the legs to a lame person. You know, you trying to learn wisdom from a fool is about like learning to dance from somebody who's lame. You know, it's not going to work. I mean, lame legs don't really help a person. You know, they don't facilitate it. Or he said it's like this thorn in the drunkard's hands. You think about what a drunk would do with thorns in his hand. Probably hurt himself and certainly hurt anybody else around him. And that's what's going to happen with words of wisdom, a proverb in a fool's mouth. He's going to wound somebody. He's going to lacerate somebody, either himself or other people or probably both. So, you know, you really can't, You don't try to teach a fool wisdom. He's not going to know what to do with it, and it's going to just make a further mess. Look at verse 8. Like one who binds a stone in a sling, so is he who gives honor to a fool. Don't you love these analogies? Now, think about what that would mean. You bind the stone in the sling. Now, you know what the slingshot's used for, right? What if you tie the stone in such a way that it stays with the sling? The sling's meant to throw the stone. You know, you tie it to the sling, and it's what are you going to do with the sling? It's useless then. So it is giving honor to a fool. That's about as much nonsense as tying a rock or tying the pebble or whatever to the slingshot. It's not going to do any good. We're back to this idea. Don't honor fools. Don't make them your heroes. You know, we got to watch that, because sometimes we get superficially impressed with people who are really fools. And we don't want to do that. We don't want to give them honor or look up to them or respect them or whatever. Then look at verse 10. Like an archer who wounds everyone, so is he who hires a fool or who hires those who pass by. Don't hire him. That would be about like going on a rampage with a bow and arrow. Some berserk archer that just starts shooting. Hard telling what he's going to hit, who he's going to wound or kill. You're probably going to be you if you hire him, or your clients. You know, it's disastrous. It's not smart to use, hasty hiring practices. If you've got a business, you need to hire somebody, you'd be better off not, rather than hiring the fool. And he's going to mess up more than he helps. And don't just hire the first guy who comes along that you don't know anything about. You know, because that's going to be a disaster. You really need to know, is he going to help or hurt me? And if it's a fool, it'll be harmful, not helpful. You can see so much wisdom in these. It's amazing how much wisdom Solomon can concentrate in a few verses. Look at 11. Like a dog that returns to its vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. You know how fools are. They don't ever learn anything. So they it's like just going back to your own vomit and eating again. Can you imagine a dog doing that? It's kind of gross. You know, that's what a fool do. He'll just go right back, do the very same foolish thing again. It's like, you know, the power of gravity or something just pulls him right back down. You know, food poisoning doesn't ever affect his appetite. He'll just go back and eat the same thing again. You know, that's the fool. He never improves. He just keeps doing foolish things. You've known a few people like that, right? The goal is that we not be people like this. Then look at verse 12. This is rather remarkable. Bet you wouldn't think there'd be anybody worse than a fool, right? Well, look at 12. Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than for him. It is remarkable that a fool can be outclassed. But the guy who's wise in his own eyes, who's conceited and doesn't think he needs to learn anything, he's worse than a fool. A fool has one hindrance. He's ignorant. A conceited fool has two. He's ignorant, and he's self-delusional enough to think that he knows everything. You know, I mean, a fool could somewhere along the line actually come to realize he doesn't know anything and learn something. But a person who's wise in his own eyes, the person who thinks, I really know everything. You know, I don't need anybody to tell me anything. Well, how are you going to learn anything if you think you already know it? You know, you ever tried to give directions to somebody who was convinced they knew where they were going? You know, they're not going to listen. They're not going to do it. They may not know where they're going, but if they think they do, you might as well just not waste your time in giving them directions, because they're not going to pay any attention. So the guy who's wise in his own eyes, the guy who thinks he knows it all, is worse than a fool, which is hard to get in the book of Proverbs. Well, we move on from the fool now to another branch of foolism. I don't know, fooldom. I don't know what that is. And that's the lazy man. Look at verse 13. The sluggard says, there's a lion in the road. A lion's in the open square. Well, one excuse is as good as another, right? You know, if you don't want to do something, you've always got reasons. There's always some excuse. There's always something you bring up. You know, so he can't go out of the house because after all, that lion might attack him. Well, he can't really even get out of bed. Look at verse 14. As the door turns on its hinges, so does the sluggard on his bed. That's a great visual, right? He manages to actually turn over. That's the exercise he gets. You know, what is that anyway? What would make somebody just want to stay in bed? Well, you know, Solomon called that laziness. I don't think that's probably what we'd call it. I think we'd probably call it, I just feel bad, I don't feel like it, I'm depressed, and we don't want to face challenges, we don't want to deal with whatever it is we've got to deal with. You know, that's what happens to us. I mean, it's a lack of courage and determination. There are days when you really don't want to get out of bed. There are days when you don't feel like it. And maybe it's you don't feel like it physically. Mostly it's how you feel emotionally that makes you feel bad physically. But the only way to ever deal with something is to confront it and face it and do it. Does it ever help you feel better not to do what you need to do? It doesn't go away. And the fact that you didn't deal with it just adds one more day to the stress of not dealing with whatever it was you needed to deal with. You have a phone call you really need to make, and you've been needing to make it, and you've been needing to make it, and you've been needing to make it, and it just weighs on you more and more and more. Or some task you just really don't want to do, it needs to be done, but I hate to do it, and so you keep trying to put it off and, you know, staying in bed a little longer or whatever. It's so much less stressful just to face those things and do them. Well, then 15, the sluggard buries his hand in the dish. He's wary of bringing it to his mouth again. You know, he can kind of get his hand down there by the force of gravity. But trying to bring his hand up with the fork to his mouth is just too much work. Of course, obviously, he's enjoying poking fun at the fool. But it is amazing how foolish we are when we just won't act, when we won't do anything. You know, when we're too down to feed ourselves, we're too down. Then look at 16. The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can give a discreet answer. I think this is the deal with this. If you're going to try to respond with wisdom, you're going to have to do research. You're going to have to think through things. And the fool's too lazy to go through the mental discipline that would enable him to give an intelligent reply. So he's the guy, oh, I know it already. I don't need to study it. I don't need to research. I don't need to find out anything. I've got the answer. Because he's not willing to work hard enough to figure it out. You know anybody who does that with Bible questions or with Bible classes? They don't want to work to study and learn something. So they just answer off the top of their head whatever comes to their mind, and then they double down on it and insist it's the right answer. Because they didn't want to have to put in the work it takes to really learn something. If we're the kind of person who thinks, oh, I always know the right answer whether I've studied it or not, we're the lazy fool here. Then verse 17, like one who takes a dog by the ears is he who passes by and meddles with strife not belonging to him. Like, you know, don't try to, you know, get yourself involved in something that's none of your business. That's like taking a dog by the ears. That would probably not be the place you want to take him by. You know, he's probably going to bite you. So it's probably going to come back to bite you. If you start messing with something that's not any of your business, sometimes we need to know where to keep our nose away from and what not to get involved with. Then look at 18 and 19. This is practical. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death. So is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, was I not joking? You know people like that? You know, whenever they get caught, I was just a joke. I was just joking. He says that's like being reckless with firebrands, arrows, and death. You don't joke about things that are serious and hurt people. That's really a cop-out. I would say this. Don't ever joke when you're serious. You know, somebody has a problem, but instead of having the guts to go to them and just talk to them calmly, lovingly, and sincerely and say, you got a problem, you joke about it. You realize how unfair that is? They don't know if it's a joke or if it's real. And if it hurts their feelings and they say something about it, oh, I was just joking about it, but you really weren't. You were really trying to make a point. You just didn't want to have, you didn't have the guts to make the point directly. It's not fair. The only fair thing to do is to be direct when you want to say something. One of the things I've tried to learn to do in teasing people, sometimes teasing can be helpful, is A, tease them only about things that clearly are not an issue. You tease some really muscular guy about being really weak and wimpy, where everybody knows that's not the case. You tease some really super intelligent person about, you know, how they need to go back to school and learn something or whatever, where everybody understands you're teasing about an area of their strength. Or also, sometimes I think it's helpful just to say, hey, let me tell you something. I'm teasing here, and if this bothers you, tell me, or even ask, does that bother you? Is that an area that's sensitive to you? Because sometimes people actually are sensitive about things that they have really great strengths in. So we got to be really careful about this, oh, it was just a joke business. Because if it's not clear it's a joke, it can be really harmful. And it can be a way of us trying to just avoid responsibility for the point we're sort of half trying to make to the person. Look at 20. For lack of wood, the fire goes out. And where there's no whisperer, contention quiets down. Like charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. The words of a whisperer are like dainty morsels, and they go down into the innermost parts of the body. And he's talking about gossip and slander primarily here. And slander and gossip will keep everything stirred up. It's like wood for the fire. The more you add to it, the more it keeps the conflagration going. And, you know, people will do that. They'll just feed the fight, you know, telling one person, you know what they said about you? You know what they said about you? You know, go back and forth one side or the other, just keeping everybody stirred up. I'm not sure why people find that enjoyable, but that's a pretty common thing to have done. First of all, we need to avoid doing that. We have no business revealing certain things. It's not going to be helpful. It's not going to be edifying. Half the time, it's not even true. And, you know, we need to help people work together and get along. Our goal is to be peacemakers, not peace wreckers. And so it would be better. You know, if two people are having a hard time, why not go to the one person and say, you know, this person you're having a hard time with, you know, told me a few months ago how much they thought highly of you, and they told me about these good qualities you have. Or whatever. Say something that would be encouraging and help to reconcile. Don't keep things stirred up. You know, and you realize what this whisperer does, this gossip. You know, if you hear something about somebody, you usually don't forget it. And it kind of shapes how you look at them. It's kind of like a time release capsule that just keeps delivering its poison little by little. You know, you're never really, I think it's true, but it might be true, but I don't know, but I'm sure not, you know, and all that. It's just really damaging. So we've got to really be careful about that. Then look at verse 23. Like an earthen vessel overlaid with silver dross are burning lips and a wicked heart. He who hates disguises it with his lips, but he lays up deceit in his heart. When he speaks graciously, do not believe him, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Now, what he's talking about is being deceitful. And it's like you take a vessel, it may be a pretty ordinary earthen vessel, it's a clay vessel, but you put a really nice-looking glaze on it, and it makes it look totally different than the reality of what it is. That's what people do in their lives. They put a glaze on it, And it makes them look something totally different from what they really are. They may say really nice things, but in the inside, they're full of hatred and malice. you know, you have to learn to see through people, you know, because a lot of times they'll disguise it, and they'll be really sweet. I've heard people do that. You know, I've heard people just be so sweet and nice to somebody. You've heard this too. To their face, they're just saying, oh, what a wonderful person they are. The moment they walk out the door, they start bad-mouthing them and saying all these terrible things about them. You ever done that? You know, we need to be careful to be very honest. And we need to be discerning. Just because people say nice things to you doesn't always mean that's what they're saying behind your back. We understand that. 26. Though his hatred covers itself with guile, his wickedness will be revealed before the assembly. I mean, you know the one thing about being deceitful? It'll work for a while, and then it'll be discovered. I mean, you have a really hard time maintaining this double-faced thing for a long period of time. Eventually, things catch up to you. And then verse 27, he who digs a pit will fall into it, and he who rolls a stone, it will come back on him. What you do to against other people will come back on you. You'll become the victim of your own plot. You'll forget where you dug the hole and you'll fall into it. It's one of the most common Bible teachings. You reap what you sow. What you do to others comes back, done back to you. We just have to remember that. I mean, Jesus said treat others like you'd like for them to treat you. Because however you treat them, that's probably about the way you're going to get back. God sees to it that we reap what we sow. And then in 28, a lying tongue hates those it crushes, and a flattering mouth works ruin. Flattery sounds pretty good some of the time. Kind of like to hear compliments and nice things about ourselves. But you understand that flattery sets people up to get taken advantage of. You flatter somebody so that you can exploit them, because they're not expecting it. You say such nice things to them, they're caught off guard. The Proverbs has a lot of things to say about flattery and condemns it. So just a really helpful chapter, I think, in Proverbs. Those comparisons are really thoughtful and noteworthy. And as I've said so many times in Proverbs, man, you can't preach this and do justice to it, because every one of those really needs to be kind of rolled around in our mind and thought through. Good passages to just take them one at a time and just think about them for a while and think about all the different situations they cover, kind of different angles on them so that we can be built up. But it's amazing that the Lord puts so much wisdom in His Word. He knows us so well. And it's just incredible to suddenly realize these were written 3,000 years ago. And they're still as practical for us as they were back then. That's amazing. Man doesn't change, and God had so tremendous insight into what really matters for people. If you're not a Christian, we encourage you to come and obey the gospel and submit your life to the Lord while we stand and sing.